she had me. Two nurses to hold me, one nurse to slap me. Doctor turned to mama and he shook his head, wiped the sweat off his brow. And then he said, this boy's way off the charts as far as I can tell. Mama, he's a double XL.
Country music fan, particularly classic country, join me, Cope Reynolds, every Friday night for Liberty Lounge right here on the Survival Circle Network. Absolutely the fastest 2 hours on internet radio. Liberty Lounge. Every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, 10 to midnight Eastern. Right here on Survival Circle. Hi, I'm Cope Reynolds, and welcome to The Shooting Bench, the most radical, right-wing, conservative, no-holds-barred, information-packed, freedom-loving firearms information program on talk radio, beginning right now.
Die, fight, and you may die. Run, and you'll live. At least a while. And dying in your beds, many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
And here we are, and welcome to The Shooting Bench. We even made it on time tonight. How about that? Bless our little pea-picking hearts. It is the 21st of June. Let me make sure we've got sound, and we're recording, and we're doing all that professional radio stuff. And it's a Tuesday. How about that? Two consecutive days we've had a show. That's awesome.
It is.
I have Anthony Bosworth with me again. And we've got some new stuff to talk about. We've had a kind of interesting last 24 hours. So, and that reminds me, there may be some more interesting stuff. I forgot my phone. I've got to go and I may have to back out and give this to Anthony for a few minutes here. I've got to make a call, and it may be important. It might give us some more show material.
Sit down.
Huh?
You want me to sit down?
Or go get your phone. You'll get the phone, and then we'll check it. Wait a minute, we gotta see if we're all still plugged in here. We just about had a wreck. Okay, I think we're still in. All right, let's look and see if we got sound. How is everything going? Let's find the chat room here. All right, there's the chat room, and I don't know if we have sound or not. Well, I guess we'll talk for a little bit. We'll record it. Whether we have sound or not, don't matter. Okay. We got an anonymous there that says sounds good. So, we had, as you probably know, for those of you that are new, we're in Yakima, Washington tonight, or close to it. And we've come up here for both the Arms Expo and some classes that we're doing and just to spend time with friends and patriots, and that makes the whole trip worthwhile. And we had our Counter-Strike class today, which was very interesting. We managed to get our very own teenage patriot in there today, and she did awesome. We talked about her last night on the show quite a bit, and she pretty much set the pace in there today. Believe it or not, she did a great job, and I was most impressed. She wanted to, you know, you get people to take some of these classes, whether it's a gun class or a history class, it doesn't matter. When you have somebody that's interested and they pay attention and they want to do it, it shows right off the bat.
Good.
And Aubrey really, really showed. She put her heart into it. And you could tell the way she was driving those punches in. She did. she did good. And we had another, I don't know if she's on the chat tonight or not. She's pretty tired. This was a class that was pretty challenging for her because she has some physical challenges and issues that made it a little bit more difficult for her to do everything than a lot of people. But she stayed in there, took every bit of it. I was proud of her. She really put her heart into it, and towards the end, I could tell though she was wore out. She was done. She was ready to go home. If we'd had to go another hour, I don't know if she'd have made it.
Yeah.
But she hung in there really well for the issues that she has going on.
The thing to remember there is, you know, yeah, if she has to deploy that training that you were given today, it wouldn't last 8 hours. You know.
Right.
It's going to be all-out survival and then done, disengage, get out of the area.
And hopefully, if we taught her right and she paid attention, it should only last about 12 seconds. and then she's going home.
12 seconds for her, lifetime for them.
Yeah, that's the whole idea. Hopefully it's going to work that way. Interesting class. It's a lot of fun. And
pretty good facility, too. The
EAC. It was perfect, man. I was surprised when I went down there. That was, I want to, next time if we manage to make it up here again, we might wind up doing maybe a Counter-Strike class or a Glock Armors class. Or so. That was a great facility. It's absolutely perfect. It was big enough that we could set the chairs up over here and have the people sit there while we went through the lecture time and not have to pick stuff up, just move right over into the other part. And it was awesome. I didn't even know that existed here. It was excellent.
Yeah, it's one of the old buildings attached to the fire station there that they built as a fire hall. And it's loaned to the community at our needs and everything. It's a pretty nice facility. It has a full kitchen in it. It has restrooms. Even has a fireplace in it.
Hey, I noticed that. Yeah. Matter of fact, I used the fireplace as a landmark here when we was talking about the 21-foot rule. I said, probably about from here to that fireplace. And I stepped it out, and I said, no probably. It was exactly from there to that fireplace. All right. Well, why don't you, if you don't mind, take a couple of minutes and talk about what we're doing with radios and trying to get our stuff going here. If you could spend a minute, I've got to make a quick phone call.
Okay.
If you could bail me out there for a minute, I'll be right back.
Okay, see if I can baffle the listeners.
Yeah.
What was it my dad used to say? If you can't dazzle them with brilliance, baffle them with
something else.
Yep, exactly. Well, let's see, the last couple days, radios. Radios are always a problem. Every time we go on a mission or an operation, we do our radio checks, we get all of our radios up, have our throat mics on, and invariably, we have failures. Sometimes we're prepared to deal with those failures with backup equipment, sometimes we're not. Our biggest one is just simply having mic failure across the board. Yeah. Seems like no one can listen, hear each other. Then we're forced to pull the mics and do it with quiet volume or even go to hand signals. Redundancy is a big thing in equipment and different methods of communicating. Especially if you're doing close security type stuff, you want to have a backup hand signal format. Because the radios can fail you. We find that when you go into the tin buildings or the steel buildings, you can talk fairly well inside, but you cannot communicate on the outside with some people. We had failures of hand mics this weekend. Three hand mics, two of them went bad. We didn't know it, and we were thinking we were losing radios. We had some bad radios, and I actually went through a whole bunch of radios I had and sorted them out by good and bad, and then realized that it was a hand mic that was bad and had to go back and redo them. Let's see, we found just doing a maintenance on our radios, taking the batteries out, checking the contacts, looking the battery over, we found two swollen batteries. One was so swollen that we couldn't get it back in the radio. You just don't throw this equipment in boxes or your bag and just forget about them. You got to continue to maintenance them, check them once in a while. Some of the radios have lights on them. Some of those lights don't work any longer. There's things you can do to make your radios work longer. Like on some of these radios, the mics will go out and the speakers will go out. They're not garbage. You got to put a hand mic on them that provides an external speaker and an external mic, and you can continue using them. But those are the things that you need to check when you get ready to do this stuff. Your equipment can fail, and literally when you're in a mission, you got to have backup or be prepared to deal with that stuff. And well, let's see what else. We were installing some CBs today. Actually, one of them was for Eddie Crump, and he picked up a CB, an antenna, some coax, and he lives about 3 hours away from me here, and we've been pretty busy this weekend, and we were going to install it this weekend, and he literally waited until about an hour and a half before he was leaving, going headed back over the pass to put it in his vehicle. That caused some problems. I mean, we didn't have time to make sure it worked. Now he's on the road trying to get his radio to work, and we can faintly hear him. He's probably about, oh, I would say 30 miles out. We should have a pretty good line of sight on him, but he's transmitting real low, and we're receiving him real low. If the vehicle at our end was running that the CB's in, we wouldn't hear him. And so being prepared this for this kind of stuff is important. You know, getting the radios in before the last minute before you go on a mission now, called him and asked him why he wasn't using his little handheld radio. And he packed it in the wrong spot. When they were packing up the truck, they were relying on that CB to work that we hadn't verified yet. And now all of his little handheld radios are all packed up in the gear, buried underneath all the stuff in the back of the truck. You know, it's kind of like plant. You know, we need to plan better. Let's see what else, some of the radio stuff that we've been doing this weekend. Antennas. Going through all the radios and checking the external condition of the antenna. Some of them had kinks. I think one of them got chewed on by a dog at some point, or a kid. We had a couple bad antennas we had to change out. And this is just equipment that we have in our bags or our boxes, or even stuff that we use every day in the trucks or on our sides. And, you know, the maintenance, you need to keep up on it. I mean, this if you're rough on equipment, like I am, you know, because I have it on my side and I don't watch what I'm doing when I'm working. I work. And so the equipment gets beat up pretty good. And so you got to keep up on the maintenance. Another thing that we found that where I lacked is every time we go on an operation, I usually hand one of my radios to the other teams that I'm working with and tell them to make this radio like theirs. And that happens so often that out of like 10 radios, I was going through them and realized that I only had one radio out of 10 radios that was still programmed the way that our group does it. But all the other radios were programmed differently compared to, not compared, but, you know, aligned with these other groups that we work with and everything. And so every now and then we got to go back and wipe them clean and reset them all. You know, we grab a radio because it's got a good battery and it head out the house and then realize that it doesn't have any of the freaks in it that we're used to having in our area. Cope and I was going over a list of frequencies that he uses, and he's got a pretty good setup there, how he sets up his channels and his frequencies and everything. First, I think he has 10. It may be 20, I ain't sure. First 10 or 20 channels set up to match your regular civilian band radios. And that's pretty nice. You go to channel 3 on it, and it's channel 3 on a CB. And so I kind of like the way he has that set up. And then he has the rest of them in blocks of types of groups. A pretty slick way he's got it set up. Works pretty good because when I go down to Arizona, I have a programming in my radio where I can just go over to those channels and I know I can come up on his net in Arizona when I'm down there. And so that's pretty nice to have it set up. And I noticed by looking at his setup there, he's got it set up to where when he's in different areas that he can just jump over to their repeaters and their local freaks. And so being prepared is pretty good there. And I do not know what's taking him so long. I find myself staring at the wall here looking for something to talk about. Well, let's see. What else did we do today? Well, I know Cope did the Counter-Strike class. Eddie took that class. I heard that he did fairly well in that. I heard that he was trying to be a bull in a china cabinet in it. But Eddie's a good guy. I see Cope walking past the window out here. Wow. I don't know. What else did we do? And he didn't show me how to start music here. I'm about ready to holler at him out the window. We don't have Eddie's dog jumping through the window today during the show, like we did yesterday. Let me check here the chat room, see if people are laughing at me here. Talk about the expo. Thank you, Anonymous. Expo. Okay. Well, we talked quite a bit about it yesterday. But let's talk about it again today. The expo was good. The weather sucked. There was several other events going on in the valley. They didn't have a very good turnout either, because of the rain. What happened is we're about 30 miles out of town, and so for about 2-3 hours after it quit raining out here, it was raining in town, and people didn't realize if they would have jumped in the vehicle and come out a little bit, they'd have got out of the rain. We did fairly well. Some of our vendors did really well. Got a lot of new vendors this year. There was a fire striker class that was there that was had some nice equipment. Some medical equipment there. I really liked the dissolvable sutures they had there. Let's see, what else? Well, we had over 2,000 guns on site for sale. That was pretty cool to see, of all kinds. It was a family event. We had a lot of children there. We had a Sunday service. Live music with Jordan Page. Let me read the chat here. Oh, yes. Like Yakima Glock said, we had a nice bonfire. That was a pretty good attraction there, especially to the kids. Constantly finding myself enforcing my rule, no kid between me and the fire pit. They seem like they always want to play right between you and the hot rocks. Yeah, people were a little let down that we didn't have a live range this year like we did last year. We just didn't have the manpower we did last year. Last year, my place is about 2 miles away from where the expo is, and we have a range up here. And so last year we had a live range up here, and so people could come up and test fire weapons, and we actually were firing 50 cals and stuff like that. This year we didn't have that. We just didn't have the manpower to man it. Let's see, what else about the expo? Ammo? We had pallets of ammo at the expo. Pallets. Good price, factory loads. They did fairly well. That vendor actually ended up leaving early, and he was about half packed up when people started going over and buying more ammo, and he did more ammo sales in the last half hour while he was packing up than he did the first part of the weekend. And he still packed up and left, but I guess he made enough off the ammo in the last hour that it was worth his time. If he'd have stayed, he'd have sold completely out of his ammo. No issues with the local neighborhood, really. There was some call-in to local authorities complaining that how dare we be on private property selling guns, and doing liberty things. Seems like everywhere you go, you find the people that, they just can't handle liberty. And I don't know what they expected to happen by calling authorities and reporting that we were there having a liberty event selling guns, but they did. The facility that Cope was talking about earlier on the show here that he did the Counter-Strike class in was actually the local fire hall. And we had some of the locals contacting the local fire hall trying to get us thrown out of there because we were selling guns in a pasture, half mile away. It's funny how people think that way, but... and of course, like always, during cleanup, went back during cleanup, and Patriots just seem to be clean. If they leave garbage behind, they leave it bagged up and they leave it beside the road for us to pick up. Very little stuff to pick up off the ground. One of my favorite parts about this expo was the theme, our country's in distress. We did have the American flags flying upside down, all with the exception of the one at Lavoie's Memorial. That one we flew right side up just simply because we didn't want photos being taken of his memorial and people trying to say that his memorial was disrespectful. So we flew that flag right side up. But we had 70, 50 Old Glories, and they were all giving off the distress signal. Didn't have a lot of problem with people with it. I think maybe one on Facebook. The locals, they would ask, but when we explained it to them, they were in agreement. So that's pretty good there. And I just totally lost the chat room. Let's see. John Fish is asking, is LFA growing? Yes, LFA is growing in leaps and bounds. Our auxiliary is. We're picking up a lot more support. Our ground team, which is, I guess you could consider it our tactical team, that would be the team that we do close security with. They're the ones you would see in uniform. That's stabilized. Because it takes quite a bit to get into that team, so that's stabilized. But our auxiliary is growing. I mean, we've got people in there from 14 to I think our eldest member is 72, 73 years old. He operates in a support role. Very helpful. He's found his spot. We picked up, well, the gentleman has been a member of LFA for quite some time, but he just, here in the last 6 months, he assumed the role of our public relations guy, and that would be Mike Richards. And he does a really good job. The guy's good with words. He's good with cleaning up my notes and stuff that I want to put out to the press and the public, and he makes me sound good, which is always a benefit. We've got a graphic designer, Adam McDonald. He does a lot of the artwork, and you see on the sites. He does a lot of the stickers, vinyl cutting, and stuff like that we use. Let's see. Of course. It would be nice if we could find a financial backer for the organization, but not everybody's lucky enough to find a millionaire. So we keep the auxiliary; they keep working really hard to keep us going. Let's see. Anonymous wants to know: in new state starting LFA. Let's see. Let me read back here. Okay, let me go back and address Zardzode 1, or however you say that. I didn't explain it when I said that the flags were upside down. You had somebody on Facebook asking why the flags were upside down. I can tell you from my point of view, and you can derive the purpose from that. As a combat veteran that has defended this nation in combat, I swore an oath, foreign and domestic. Okay. I've defended this country, foreign and domestic. I'm honor bound and duty bound by oath to defend this country. And part of defense is alert, is to alerting your people. The flag being upside down is a universal signal of distress. And according to according to U.S. law, the flag should not, and I will say the law says should, not shall, should not be flown upside down unless in time of distress, loss of property and life. Well, as a veteran, I would say when our country has become so degraded that our government, our governmental system, and those working in it will gun an innocent man down and murder him, government killing its own citizens, there is no greater sign of a nation being in distress. And so me personally, I believe that if you're a veteran, you are duty-bound and honor-bound to fly that that flag in distress. Because no veteran in his right mind can say a government gunning down their citizens is a normal government, is a safe government. So,
Title 4, Chapter 1, Section 8, Subsection A says the flag should never be displayed with the Union down except as a signal of dire distress in instances of extreme danger to life or property. That's pretty well sums it up, doesn't it?
It does. It does.
It doesn't say your... It could be your ship going down, but it doesn't necessarily mean in a military application. It could be because your house is on fire, because you've been attacked by illegal aliens or whatever, and you've gone to a little place and you run your flag up upside down. It's a signal of distress.
Or you're just simply injured and you can't call for help in any other way.
Yeah, and there's a lot of instances that you could use that. We prefer to put it up as a signal that our entire country is in distress right now, that our government has in disarray, and we are signaling to patriots and veterans and anybody that gives a damn that we are very much in distress. And I agree with that 100%. I did it. I actually had a guy who was a Marine. I was flying the flag upside down back in 1999. And a Marine was driving by out on the highway. It was a little over, about right at a quarter of a mile from the house. And he just happened to look over that way. We're the only house out there. And he just happened to look over there and saw it. And he whooped in the driveway and come and ask us if everything was all right. Yep, everything's fine. Thanks for checking. Here's the deal. Here's why we're doing this. And he agreed with us 100%. And then a month, 2 months later, a guy put an ad in the letter to the editor in the paper that said he would never do business with us because we were disrespecting the flag. So, you know, you're gonna get both sides of it no matter what.
Exactly.
It doesn't make any difference.
Exactly. Well, and it's Eddie being a former Marine. He was confronted by some people for flying a flag upside down. And frankly, they didn't even understand that it was a universal sign of distress. They just simply took it as a sign of disrespect.
Yeah.
And of course,
a lot of them do. They just don't get it.
They do. And the fact it is their ignorance is what causes the problem, not the fact that the flag was flown upside down. It was simply that they didn't understand that the flag flying upside down is a sign of distress. It's funny too because Eddie's has gotten some pushback about it, that he's offending veterans because he's flying the American flag upside down.
The proper term is you're offending a few veterans.
A few veterans.
A few uneducated, unknowledgeable veterans and a couple of anal orifices.
Exactly. Well, and
overwhelmingly, we're okay.
Exactly. Well, and the point I was making is, so you have a veteran calling out a sign of distress, the nation's in distress, and the best they can do is, oh, you're offending a veteran.
You know what happens when you get offended? Nothing.
Nothing. Exactly. Nothing.
That's the whole thing. Nothing. Your little feelings are hurt, and it's all over. Nothing happened.
Well, I'll tell you what, that guy that got PTSD for firing that assault weapon, man, that hurt my feelings.
Oh, man. We'll talk about that after the break. Sorry we had to abandon Anthony and put him in a spot there. I have some information that I need to share with you after this break. So we'll be back here in just a minute. Stay with us.
come to shove. Taken of all of your favors, the hungry inside of me cried out, there's more. Don't misunderstand me, it's not that you're lacking. The fact is your beauty's what dreams are made of. I just wish you were someone I love. And I did not mean to mislead you. And I never intended to push come to shove. I don't have one thing against you. I just wish you were someone I love. I did not mean to mislead you.
Drowning in a whiskey river, bathing my memoried mind in the wetness of its soul, feeling the amber current flow from my mind, and warm my empty heart she left so cold. Whiskey River, take my mind. Don't let her memory torture me. Whiskey River, don't run dry. You're all I've got, take care of me. River, bathing my memoried mind in the wetness of its soul, feeling the amber current flow from my mind, and warm my empty heart she left so cold. Whiskey River, take my dry. You're all I've got, take care of me.
Welcome back to another segment of The Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network.
Alright, we're back. We had to do a little bit of Liberty Lounge there because we had a big bowl of chili right here we just couldn't just stop in the middle of just to talk on the radio. So we had to extend our break just a little bit. We are going to go for a full 2 hours tonight. We started at 7 o'clock Pacific and we will go till at least 9 Pacific here. So we started talking just before the break there. And this story... I don't know if it hurts my feelings, if it frustrates me, it offends me, I don't know. I don't know what I feel over this story.
I know what I feel. I feel the need, the want to bash my head against a wall.
I feel the need to bash somebody's head against a wall. I don't get it. This is about the guy that, fired an AR-15. He was a a reporter, I think.
Yeah, I think he was some kind of liberal reporter.
I can't even address this in an intelligent manner. This guy said that it was deafeningly loud. It was
scary.
It
kicked real hard.
Horrifying. Menacing, all this stuff, and it said it temporarily gave him PTSD. Are you freaking kidding me right now? Unbelievable. I am offended that there are men. I know he's not the only 14 karat wuss out there. That there are men. People that call themselves men.
And it's stretching it.
Yeah, it's stretching it a lot. I would feel okay, I think, with this guy using the girls' bathroom. I don't think there's any threat there. matter of fact, I think he's probably plumbed in that direction that would make it easy for him to do that.
I think he should be flushed.
Probably so.
The guy makes
me sick. Bruised his shoulder from the recoil? Shut up!
He makes me sick.
You know, in boot camp, they used to take an AR-15 M16. We didn't have M4s in those days. They take an M16 and put it on their chin and pull the trigger to demonstrate to us that it wasn't going to hurt you. And this guy said he was bruised from the recoil. Well,
when you come in, they didn't even have the A1s. They'd have been just the straight M16s.
No, they were A1s.
Were they?
Yeah, they just coming up with the A2s about the time I got out.
Wow.
Now the A1s were the... Yeah, they had the A1s quite a while before I went in.
Yeah, we had A1s in basic.
Yeah.
But A2s were out.
Yeah, the A2s weren't out at all. When they were just talking about them, we knew what they were going to do and the, you know, how they were designed and the features that they had and all that, but I'd never seen one. But the A1s just simply had the forward assist and stuff. Yeah, all those were...
Slick handles, cord grip.
Yeah. But it didn't bruise me. It didn't send me to my safe place to pout and suck my thumb while the men went out. And I am so offended by this little wuss.
I can say that the A1s, when I was in basic, bruised me.
Huh?
They bruised my ego.
Yeah.
Being a farm boy and a hunter all my life, I knew I was a good shot with a rifle. But it took me a little bit to figure out, get the hang of the M16, the whole different method of holding it and everything. It's one of those situations, same thing I run into with you. You know, grew up knowing how to shoot long rifles, and refused to forget what I was taught to learn a new way. And so it took me a little bit in basic to get the hang of the the M16.
Yeah, and it was, you know, the aperture sight was not something that I was real accustomed to. I'd seen some. Matter of fact, my dad's old 22 had a more of a peep sight, though, a mm-hmm. much smaller hole, not a ghost ring type sight. So it took me a little bit to get accustomed to that, and not just the, you know, my favorite open sight, and still right now today, my very favorite sight is what's on a Marlin lever action. Mm-hmm. You know, the 336, 3030, or yep. 44 Magnum, whatever. I absolutely love that open sight mm-hmm. arrangement.
I really liked the Winchester full buck sight on the front sight. I really like that sight. It's what I grew up using and everything.
Yeah, and that's a lot of it. This guy must have grew up using tampons, I think, mostly.
Squirt guns or something.
I'm astonished at the comments that he made about this gun. What's that? Do you still have that thing on your phone that we saw earlier? Bring that up. Let's talk about that. There's an update to this story. Many people have objected to my use of the term PTSD in the above story. The use of this term was in no way meant to conflate my very temporary anxiety with the very real condition experienced by our brave men and women in uniform. I regret the inarticulate use of the term to describe my in-the-moment impression of the gun's firepower, and I apologize for it. I have also posted a follow-up piece.
Oh, I can't find it now.
I don't know. This story was written actually by the guy that he said it felt to me like a bazooka and sounded like a cannon. So he's never shot an M16 or an AR-15, but he knows what a bazooka feels like. They quit using bazookas before this guy was born. Unbelievable.
It sounds like he's got a Hollywood perception of what he thinks it should be.
Yeah, well, I'm not impressed. We have, as soon as Anthony pulls this up here, we got a little another guy that was hurt, got a little PTSD from an event that he was involved in, and it's probably a little more believable than this other one. It's a little scary, I think. But we'll get that as soon as Anthony brings that up here. We had, I'm going to wait to start this other. Do you find it?
No, it's gone.
Okay, well, I'll wait to start this other one here. Well, if that one's gone, we can't read it. I guess we can start at any time.
Well, actually, I think it was a play. It was a play on that author.
It was for sure.
What kind of car was it?
Prius.
A Prius, yeah. How give him whiplash and
crazy. Let me go check the chat room while you make one last check there. Let's see here. The someone asked farther up here what kind of choices of ammunition there was at the expo. Actually, quite a bit. I was rather impressed. There was some 22 there. It was 22 Magnum. The 22 and 22 Magnum wasn't really a deal. I didn't buy any. Probably should have. It wasn't horribly expensive. It wasn't for this day and age and what we have now. At least it was there, which 22 Magnum is not there anywhere else. It's hard to find right now. But it wasn't too bad. He had some good prices on 9 and 40 and a pretty wide range of ammunition. And there was a little bit of ammo in there was one guy there. What'd that one guy have, 400 rifles? The guy straight across from us?
Yeah, he had, well, there was two of them. One had 400 ARs, and then the guy right next to him, and they never brought all of them out of their vehicles. But the other one next to him had a couple hundred AKs and everything, and they just bring them out just enough to keep their racks full.
Yeah, how did they do? What'd they pack up and take home?
Well, the first guy with the ARs, he cleared about $5,000 the first day. And the last time I talked to him the first day. The second day, just before he packed up, as he was packing up, he made another $4,000 and everything the second day.
Yeah.
And everything. So how many he sold, he was actually buying a lot of guns.
Was he?
Yeah, he was actually buying a lot of guns.
And you guys know that everything that was out there was done, well, not everything. Well, not everything, because we had there were some new guns out there and stuff, so a lot of that was done with 4473s. But a lot of other guns were in direct violation of I-594, which is the initiative here in Washington that says that you must go through a background check and transfer through a dealer, even for private transactions. I had every intention of giving Anthony my brand new AK-47 laser sighted heat seeking pistol, and I couldn't do it on account of we had to go down to the dealer to do that. But I meant to, you know, it was the intention, it was the thought that counts. But there was a lot of guns traded, swapped, carried around, handled back and forth, and all in direct violation of what is now state law here in Washington. It is law now, right?
It is law.
Yeah.
But as we've been telling people, it's successfully
an unlawful law. It's just a legal law.
Exactly. It's successfully nullified. I mean, yeah, you've been involved in it from day one. I mean, we've been directly involved in either ourselves or in the group that has violated that law 10,000 times.
Yeah.
And that's 10,000 times that now the court, if they try to prosecute somebody for it, they're going to have to explain why they did not prosecute these other 10,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's pretty...
Hell, I've seen it violated 4,000 times in one day.
Yeah, exactly.
In Olympia, at least 4,000 times.
Exactly.
There were people swapping back and forth and trading guns and looking at them and carrying them over here and carrying them over there and carrying them back, and all of them being against the law. And out of, you know, 2,000, 2,500 people, whatever there was there, I'll guarantee you there was every bit of 4,000, probably 6,000 or more.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that day alone.
Felonies that day by itself.
I probably sold four guns that day and bought three. That's buying and selling. That's just not violating it by sharing the gun with somebody.
And there's, what was I going to say here? Oh, since then we had the Arms Expo last year,
mm-hmm.
where we did all that. So, yeah, there's been, just that we know of in our circle of friends and stuff here, there's been between, I'm sure, 10,000-15,000.
Oh, easy. Well, clear from January up until our Arms Expo, I'd buy guns just to turn around, just so I could have a gun to turn around and sell it for $2 more than I bought it for. Just to defy that unconstitutional law.
Yeah. Alright. Hang on one second here. We have our friend that went to the other place in Burns.
Mm-hmm.
I need to call him after the show here.
Okay.
Okay. Let's move on to some other more exciting things. Oh! I was going to tell you about the phone call that I had to leave. Before we get into that, that's going to take a little time. Somebody asked if LFA was growing. Yes, it is growing slowly, but it is growing. We're not losing anybody. Have we moved into other states? Well, yes and no. We have two regions, and that is, or two, I guess, regions.
Yeah.
And so the states are there, whether or not there are people involved in that state, you know, maybe, maybe not. So, so do we have personnel in a whole bunch of other states? No. We have people in Arizona. We have people in Washington. Or is some in Oregon, right?
Some in Oregon.
Idaho.
Idaho.
Nevada.
Nevada. I think you have one in California, don't you?
Yeah, I do have one in California. Yep. And let's see. Nobody in Wyoming that I can think of. Nobody, yeah, in Montana?
None in Montana that I can think of.
Fields or whatever?
No.
Not officially?
No.
So so that's what we've got going right now. Do we have squads of people in all these states? No, we don't. The most people in LFA are here in Washington. The second most is in Arizona. And then it's just scattered, you know, helter-skelter, you know, here or there. But do we make an impression, make a showing in all these other states? Yes, we absolutely do. We have been willing to travel. We've been willing to move, to pack up and take off and go to places when it would have been much easier on us and much more appropriate if there would have been more personnel in these other states, and we wouldn't have had to. We could have directed it from where we were at and had other people do it. But in the absence of that, what happens? We go do it ourselves.
Exactly.
That's what we've had to do.
Although we do try to work with local groups that are already established there, that are outside of LFA. And
we actually did that this weekend.
Yep. Stand them up, get a mission ready, give them a mission, and brief them and let them take care of it locally. LFA finds itself organizing a lot of stuff in other towns and other states, and then getting hold of local groups and guiding them on how to do it.
Yeah. So in that regard, we have kind of an informal coalition with some of these other groups. Now, one reason we don't have people in every state out there is because we're not like some of the militias. Well, yeah, you want to join our group? Heck yeah! You be the colonel, you be the boss, and you find some other guys and get them in there. We'll tell everybody we got a whole bunch of people LFA in South Dakota. That's not how we work. It's not how we roll.
Nope.
No. We have to vet people. We spend some time with them and spend some time checking them out, and they have to be. You know, we're pretty, membership is pretty strict.
It is.
We don't just say, okay, yeah, you're patriot? Yeah, well, I'm patriot. Yeah, okay, here you go. Here's your flag. Here's your patch. Give me some money. And you're in.
Yeah, well,
and you're a general.
Let's explain that a little bit. We have an auxiliary. And that auxiliary is really in charge of, you know, fundraising, public relations, you know, that kind of stuff, your graphic design, just basically the office work, if you will, of the organization. Now, a part of that, or the auxiliary, we've got supporters that are auxiliary support. And that's basically your general public or your general, patriots that support what we do. They show up to the events. They're members of other groups, but they agree with what we do. Now, LFA's got we have a patch, and we've got patch wearing auxiliary, and we got patch wearing ground team. Basically, what that signifies is the ones that are wearing patches are fully vetted. They're dues paying members. We are an organization that we try to keep up on the dues. But you got to earn the right to pay dues. We're not out there trying to get people to pay dues. You actually got to earn the right to actually be a part of the organization to the point where you are a dues-paying member. And so we're not out trying to build just numbers. We're going for quality. Would you agree with that, Cope?
Absolutely. That's been something that's been in our militia, in the White Mountain Militia. We have never, ever, ever tried just to get numbers. I've always said I will continue to believe that I would rather have three people, five people that are well-trained, cohesive, that you trust, loyal, then I would have 400 people that I have to watch all the time and have constant problems, constant bickering, constant disloyalty, theft, infidelity in the rank. I mean, everything, you name it. Yep. And I'm not interested in any of that.
Yep, exactly.
I'd rather have a handful of guys that are trusted and loyal and well-trained than any number of guys just to say that I have any number of guys.
Exactly. And, you know, we've vetted a pretty good team. I mean, they might not be the most high-speed, low-drag out there anymore. A lot of them are, you know, middle-aged and overweight and half broke and
that's just me.
But they're dedicated, they're loyal, they understand the mission. They're not out there derailing what we're doing because they can't keep their temper. And so we've developed a pretty good team that we could literally walk away and let the team take care of it. And they might do it differently, but the overall mission is done, it is met. And it's met with a standard that we believe we need to do it in. You know, because each person has their own little way of doing it. But the mission is understood amongst us all enough that the mission can be completed.
And we've got, there's a couple of guys down in Arizona that would partially out of just respect and partially out of agreement that if I was to just disappear off the face of the earth, you wouldn't see much change. Down there. It would just continue to roll like it's going right now. Yeah. And that's the kind of people that we're looking for.
Yep.
That's why LFA doesn't grow fast. It grows solid. It grows strong.
Yep.
Big difference there.
Well, and the other thing, too, that I personally like, you know, I cherish my true friendships. I cherish my relationships. But one of the things that I have grown to respect about LFA is this boys club buddy, buddies get promoted thing doesn't even exist.
No.
You know,
not at all.
If I would say anything, I would say friends or close friends are judged or vetted even harder.
It just makes it that much worse if something goes.
Yeah.
And even then, though, you can't. I mean, you can go back to spies in the American military who's been through every background check in the world. It's impossible. It is not possible whatsoever to weed out every single one flawlessly.
Exactly.
It just can't happen.
Exactly.
But we make every effort to.
Exactly. Yeah, and. You know, I like the fact that even in our ranks, we go for the best person for the job. Mm-hmm. Regardless of friendship, regardless of anything else, the best person for the job.
And nobody argues with that.
No.
Well, why didn't you pick me? No.
Exactly.
It's because I didn't. No, we think this other guy would do a better job. And we never have that discussion. We never have that argument.
I don't think we ever have. Ever have.
What was that?
I think I tapped my mic.
Oh, okay.
Nervous habit of playing with my beard.
So, I guess we probably ought to take a little bit shorter break this time. And we've still got a little less than an hour. We have some stuff to share. As a matter of fact, I haven't even talked to Anthony about it yet. So, I think what I'll do is share this with Anthony a little bit during the break here, and then we'll come back and talk about it. You okay with that?
Yes, I am.
All right, let's do it. We'll be back in a minute. Don't go anywhere.
What's he doing in my world? What's he doing holding my world? If he's not more than just a friend, why were you kissing him? And what's he doing in my world? What's he doing in my world? Did you tell him that you're my girl. If your love is really true, tell him my world's made for two. What's he doing in my world? Oh, don't let me keep on wondering just what you're gonna do. Wondering if the one I love loves somebody new. What's he doing in my world? We don't need him in our world. So if it's true he's just a friend, explain those kisses you gave him. And what's he doing in my world?
What's he doing in my world?
Welcome back to another segment of The Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network.
All right, we be back. The reason I had to abandon Anthony there, and you gotta forgive him, he's put him in a bad spot there for a little bit, so... But it was important. And this phone call I got, Anthony, we didn't get to discuss this over the, we had another phone call over the break there. So I don't know what, why we're so damn popular all of a sudden, but anyway. This was disturbing, very interesting. Even if it's only partially true, it's disturbing. There's a place where there is some uranium mines that belong to two or three different companies. And the there was a guy that runs a, there's a company out there of a private security outfit that is armed with radios, and all they do is make sure nobody gets into the mines, nobody steals all the hundreds of thousands of tons of copper that's out there and stuff like that. And those of you, if you don't know about the uranium mines, they are all over the Southwest. They're in Colorado, they're in New Mexico, lots of them in Utah. There's been a lot of shady dealings with this uranium, but that's kind of beside the point. Anyway, this security outfit, there's a guy that talks to the person that calls me fairly regularly. And when this person called, they reported quite a conversation that has taken place over a period of about 4 weeks. This security guy used to work for a security company, and their company had several people out there, vehicles and radios, all they had. Well, the next thing they know, they're getting their checks from the Department of Defense, I mean Department of Homeland Security. And this guy was really suspicious about this. And when this started, they all had to go through background checks that they hadn't done before, additional security screening. And they were all trained and had to wear sidearms and were trained with rifles. It's the type of rifles that makes me suspicious of this story, but there's a lot of other parts of the story that kind of goes in sync with a lot of other things that we've seen. He said that they were trained with AK-47s, and that makes me a little suspicious. However, I do know that there are places in that there are applications where the AKs are used extensively. So that part of it I'm not sure about. Even if that part of it is not true, this guy has come in and showed the person that called me pay stubs that were, initially it was from Department of Homeland Security, then it was from the Department of the Interior. Then, and this is the part I don't understand, in less than 4 weeks, or about 4 weeks, they are now under the Department of Agriculture. This guy says that he is, he says that the military or a military has purchased all of this stuff out there in these uranium mines and all that. He says that he sees quite a few planes and helicopters coming in and some Ospreys coming in and landing on a mesa several miles from there that he don't know how to get to. The person that talked to me said that they saw in a matter of just a few hours, saw to now, I know everybody's seen trains with military vehicles on it, okay? Everybody and their dog is calling saying, oh, I saw a train with a tank on it. So what? Shut up. Well, this was a little bit different because there's an ammo dump depot out there. But there's nothing for maintenance or, you know, DX or anything. this train went by with a number of tan-colored military vehicles, tanks, jeeps, trucks, and whatnot. And this person didn't think much about it, saying, well, it's probably just going, you know, going out to Fort Irwin or whatever, is going that direction. Well, in a matter of just a few hours, the same train came back because she recognized the train from the graffiti and stuff. No graffiti on the vehicles or anything, but on the train. And this happened because there was a restaurant on one side of the train tracks where this person was eating lunch, and there was a place where this person was working on the other side of the tracks when the train came back. So this person saw the same markings on the train. Something pretty distinctive. And I suppose the average person wouldn't think too much about that, but this person is pretty astute as far as seeing, recognizing things like that. So there's only a couple of things that the number of places those vehicles could have gone. Since there was quite a few vehicles on there, it wasn't a matter of just going out there and pushing them over the side and coming back. So I doubt that they went to Fort Wingate. Fort Wingate was only 60 miles, not even 60 miles away, 55 miles. Yeah, plenty of time to get there and back, but probably not enough time to offload. So somewhere in between Fort Wingate and this other place is where there's where these things were unloaded. And that's the story that I'm getting. So what else? There was another part of this. There's a couple of new bunkers have been put in near these mines. And according to the guy, according to the security guy, these things are full of armament, different flavors. So I don't know how much, if any of that. Well, I know beyond a doubt that some of it is true, because I know the person that called in, and this person wouldn't blow smoke up my dress, you know. So I don't know how much of the rest of it is true, but it's enough that it's probably a little bit on the concerning side until we find out more about it. I don't know when or if I'll make it back to that part of the country again. I have no reason to go there for anything, but that may be a good enough reason. You know,
maybe
one weekend I may just have to take a drive. It's a long ways up there. But
well, two things about the story that stuck out for me. One, AK-47s. AK-47s, if we're talking worldwide, are commonly used by security companies in foreign countries.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking the security companies I'm talking about it would either be your South African security companies, your British security companies. They gravitate towards AK-47s. If it's a local, I mean, here in CONUS, if the security companies are using AK-47s, you can bet it's one of two things. It's either a private security company or it's a foreign security company.
That was the concern.
Yep. I don't know any security company that would operate CONUS that is being paid by the Pentagon using Americans and would arm them with AK-47s.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the part that I was a little concerned about. And the whole the whole cotton picking thing may be made up. I know the part about the train is probably true, probably 100%. But the rest of it, I don't know.
On the train, that was my second thought. In 60 miles from last seen location to the nearest Army depot. I've worked railheads before, loading equipment on trains. If they stopped anywhere in between, it would have to be at a railhead, or they'd have to truck in a temporary railhead.
Yeah.
That equipment just doesn't drive off the rail cars. It takes railheads.
Yeah.
Now they can easily truck in a railhead, or they'd have to have an old one or a constructed one somewhere in that route. And so that'd be my first inclination there, is to find the railhead in between, or signs that there was a mobile railhead brought in.
You know, I just thought of something, though. This person didn't mention it, because the first thing I thought of was that other fort. But there is a spur that goes from there out to the mines. Why this would happen, I don't know. I don't know if the whole thing is fabricated or what, but there would be a railhead out there, because they took hundreds over the years, hundreds of dozers and loaders and cranes and shovels and stuff out there on trains on this little spur. That spur turns off about probably 4 to 5 miles out of town and goes straight back to the mines, and that's the only place it goes. There is no other spur, no other stop, no town, no nothing.
Yeah, if they have a spur going out to the mines, which would make sense because of loading ore out, they definitely would have a railhead there. They would have a supply railhead, at least a landing that they can get equipment up on to unload the train cars. And for the most part, those type of landings could be used as a railhead to unload equipment.
Yeah, so I don't know. We'll keep you updated on this story. I may have to make a special trip up that way, just to drive around, go out, see if I can find that mesa, and see what's going on there, if anything. I'm sure that as well as I used to know that country, I can probably find what I'm looking for out there pretty easy. Then. Anyway, thought I'd share that with everybody and let you sort of decide for yourself if there's any truth to it or not. But it does concern me a little bit if there's anything out there that would make someone contrive the rest of the story. Then it's still a little bit concerning.
Exactly.
Even if 95% of it is BS.
Exactly. One of the things that concerns me the most about it is the rapid change of pay department.
Yeah.
That would concern me quite a bit. Is that right there? And I'll be the first to say this, and I know Cope is along the same lines as I am on this. Jade Helm, it's been crazy. All the sightings of, military equipment on trains and on truck transport and everything. And I'm here to tell you from experience, people, from May, late May, to end of September, it's nothing new. They've been doing it for decades. From May to the end of September, late May to end of September, is one of the most busiest time for military transport of military equipment across the United States and across the states by civilian transport, trucks, trains.
Even the fiscal year.
Exactly. I mean, that they're moving equipment to training fields ahead of the units. And some of the units train for 30 days, some of them trains for 2 weeks, And that equipment is actually getting shipped in. It's going through maintenance on site before the units arrive. They're getting logged in. The units arrive. They download or they upload the equipment with gear. They do their training cycle. It comes back to the military depots. It's washed. It's it has extensive maintenance. 1020 standard. Everything's brought up to 1020 standard. And then they're re-railheaded back onto trucks and trains, and they're shipped back. And they literally will move this equipment. It's not uncommon, say, in Washington State, to move equipment from Washington State to California, to Southern California. It happens all the time. Mm-hmm. It's not uncommon. I mean, you could almost bet on it monthly throughout the year. There's equipment convoys from the Yakima Training Center here locally, 250 miles away to Camp Murray, Fort Lewis. And yes, it's quite often that you see these convoys taking back roads through the mountains and, you know, secondary roads and everything, because they move slow and they're not wanting to hold up the main flow of traffic. And yes, they move at odd times of the day and night, when a lot of civilians ain't on the street. It ain't because they're hiding it. It's simply because they're trying to avoid civilian traffic, civilian populace. And we literally got to put it in context when we look at a lot of this stuff. The one I get the kick out of, you know, I get a kick out of it quite a bit, is the pictures of the UN equipment.
Oh, please.
And do people not understand that a lot of that equipment is American-made? They're built in American plants. They're painted.
Painted in American shops.
In American shops.
Put on American trains, taken to an American port, and sent to Libya.
Exactly.
Or wherever. You know.
Yeah. It's not uncommon to see this equipment moving.
Yeah.
And literally, when we freak out and blow it up across the internet about it, basically all you're doing is you're, what would we call that, Cope, when you get somebody used to something.
Indoctrinating.
Yeah, you're getting people used to the fact that you're making these false calls. I'm here to tell you, people, if the UN comes into America, the vehicles are not going to be painted white with big black letters UN on it. They're going to go to your local police stations. They're going to be using your local police equipment and personnel. They're going to be going to your local army depots, and they're going to be using local army equipment, and they're going to be moving fast. The UN will be here faster than what you know it. And they're not going to be coming in flying UN flags and wearing blue helmets. They're not going to give us that opportunity to predict their movements.
Well, that's too bad.
You know,
I was really looking forward to that target-rich environment.
you know, eventually, are they going to have that kind of equipment if they so chose to be here? Yeah, you can count on that. But they're going to already be in your neighborhoods before you know it. I mean, they're not going to be coming in, you know, hey, the UN's here. Matter of fact, we're already going to be in a lot of trouble by the time we realize they're here. If it gets to that point.
Yeah.
I can show you UN actions all around the world, in third world countries and that. And when UN forces move in, they use local forces, local equipment, and they gain control with that equipment and that personnel, and they back it up with UN forces and equipment at a later date.
Mm-hmm.
And once they have an occupation, then that's when you start seeing the UN equipment. That's when you start seeing UN personnel and flags and helmets and stuff. And I guess my point I'm getting at here is people really need to understand that when you overreact, you're doing quite a few things. For one, you're telegraphing what you have planned. You telegraph who you talk to and where you pass information on to.
Yep.
And you callous people to your information. You know, oh, don't listen
crying
to him.
Wolf.
Yeah, exactly. You cry wolf.
Yeah.
And people, when you need people to react, they underreact because they're so used to crying wolf.
Yeah.
And so
And I've said the same thing for I don't know how long, and especially during Jade Helm. You know, I don't think probably that the overall traffic across the nation has probably not changed much over the last several years, as far as military equipment being moved. Maybe a little. But, you know, these things, you know, we have people from Fort Campbell and Fort Stewart and all these places, you know, all these places back east that come to Fort Irwin every year.
Mm-hmm.
And they stay for sometimes several weeks. There is literally a constant flow of equipment going in and out of there.
Exactly.
And most of the calls that we get, not all of them, but a lot of the calls that we get about, the, oh, I saw the train going right down I-40. Yeah. If you'd have been standing out there last week, you would have seen another one.
Yep, with different bumper numbers.
It's been doing it since 1980-whatever, since I was there.
Yep.
And nothing has changed.
Yeah, exactly.
Sometimes they're painted, sometimes they're not. Sometimes they've taken tanks or equipment that was woodland camouflage in Fort Stewart and made it tan to go to Fort Irwin and painted it again when they got back.
Exactly. Well, and sometimes
it's been going on for 30 years or
exactly.
More.
Well, and a lot of times too is when units pick up new equipment, they'll time it with a unit training cycle in NTC. And they'll ship that equipment to NTC. And the unit will fall in on that equipment in NTC. They'll train with it because it's new equipment, or at least it's new for that unit, new type of equipment for that unit. They'll train up in NTC, and then that unit will ship their new equipment to their home state or home base. And so it's not uncommon to see equipment come in without bumper numbers or get bumper number changes while at NTC. But, you know, the key here, people, is NTC, National Training Center. That's indicating that units from all over the nation comes to that training center to train, and they train with their equipment.
Yeah. And they, the only thing that made me, when this person started telling me this story to start with, okay, here we go again, another one of the 8,000 stories I've heard in the last year. About this military movement of vehicles. The only thing that caught my attention was this person was absolutely confident that it was the same train and with nothing on it. And that was the only reason that I even said anything, because I am so tired of hearing all these stories about vehicles moving.
Exactly.
Military vehicles moving. It's always the same stuff.
Exactly.
And it means nothing. You know, you have stuff moving in and out of Dugway in Utah all the time. There's depots around. You know, there's still part of a war going on, and there's you know, they ship new stuff over there. You got other countries that buy stuff from us, and it's shipped. So, not a big thing. If it wouldn't have been for this person being so adamant that it was the same train that they'd seen a few hours earlier, then it would have meant nothing to them.
Exactly.
At all.
And, you know, let's just throw in a little bit of constitutional sheriff stuff here at that point. You know, when I run for sheriff here in Yakima County, that was part of my platform, is I strongly believe any military convoys going through a county should be escorted through the county by the local sheriff's department. From the time they enter the county until the time they leave the county. So if we have a military convoy coming to YTC here in Yakima County, when it enters our county, they should have a Yakima Sheriff's Department vehicle escorting that from the county line into the training center. And the reason why I say that is the citizens have the right, constitutional right, to know what the military forces are doing within their neighborhoods. And what it would do is it would bring a sense of security to the people within the county. If it's being escorted by a sheriff's department, then you know somebody knows they're there. You know somebody knows they're going through, where they're coming from and where they're going.
Yeah.
If there ever got a time that there was some type of military operation that they didn't want the civil authorities knowing about. Well, of course, then they're not going to be escorted by civil authorities. And so any military action, training or not, when they encroach on public roadways and easements and land, they should be escorted by civil authorities.
Yeah, I agree. And there's we've got a long ways to go. We've got a long row ahead of us to hoe here to get constitutional sheriffs everywhere. And I hate using that term. I keep using that, you know, all that makes you a constitutional sheriff is that you fill out a little form and put the right answers on it, and all of a sudden you're a constitutional sheriff. There are sheriffs that follow the Constitution, and there are constitutional sheriffs that meet a certain criteria so that you get to join the club of the constitutional sheriffs. So not all constitutional sheriffs, not all sheriffs that will and can and have followed the Constitution are in Sheriff Mack's club of constitutional sheriffs.
Exactly.
There are a good many of them out there that have walked the walk and haven't answered the little questionnaire.
Exactly.
So I don't like that term constitutional sheriff very much. I'd rather say a sheriff that will follow the Constitution.
Exactly. Well, and also, I mean, if we look at, you know, Sheriff Mack's point of view on the militia and stuff, his constitutional sheriff outline does not necessarily meet the constitutional outline for the militia. In my mind, if you are a true constitutional abiding sheriff, you're not exactly in agreement with Sheriff Mack on the topics of militia.
Yeah.
Your militia, they actually have in your rules and everything, they actually have one of the best I've seen for working with the local civil authorities. Actually, we adopted some of that for LFA, actually, directly out of your militia handbook, you know, of how we work with local civil authorities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so so just somebody that says that they're for gun rights, somebody said that they're for the First Amendment or even property rights, that doesn't make them a constitutional abiding sheriff.
Right.
It literally doesn't. I mean, there's a lot of sheriffs out there that appear to be great sheriffs. A few of them, they get that title of being a constitutional sheriff for one reason. Because they don't like the feds.
Yeah.
And there's more to being a constitutional abiding sheriff than not liking the feds.
Exactly. Yeah, that term kind of irks me. You know, the sheriff that is running there in Sholo, in Navajo County, has caught kind of a bad rap from the Republican Party of Navajo County, and I am very much very disappointed in these people for not supporting this sheriff more. Graham Harbold is he's been there and done that. He's very much, matter of fact, I don't know if I ever told you this, but he is planning on having someone come in, maybe Chris Ann Hall, to teach not only his deputies, but the general public. He's planning on having classes on the Constitution, and his deputies are to learn and abide by what they learn in these classes. And the sheriff, deputies, and civilians will be sitting side by side in these classes. And, you know, I don't know, there's not a whole lot of sheriffs, I don't think, out there that are doing that.
No. And that's actually a great, great idea. Back to being a sheriff, you know, the sheriff is the moral compass for the department.
Right.
You know, and the deputies are his hired law enforcement. But he literally is the moral compass for the whole department. His number one job description, and you know, I've said this 1,000 times, even when I was running for sheriff, his number one job description should be the Bill of Rights. And everything he does, every decision he makes, regardless how small, how large, or how strong, it should be first weighed against the Bill of Rights. And if it does not pass the Bill of Rights, something's wrong.
Yep.
I talk to law enforcement quite often and everything, and I hear it from them all the time. Yes, the Bill of Rights makes our job harder. That's not our problem.
That's right.
You know, that's the rules you must abide by, and you must find a way to do your duty within that blueprint. And if you can't, you're wrong. And there's no exceptions to that rule. You must abide by that Bill of Rights always, or you are a tyrant.
Yeah. And that's what's hard, and that's what there are. We've been so ingrained with certain things that has to do with law enforcement and government authority, and these people that are running for sheriff now, you know, they're half my age, and they have spent their whole life also. And some of them, it's hard to turn loose of all of it at one fell swoop right there and make everybody happy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we're going to have to, as distasteful as it is, there's going to have to be, I won't say compromises, but I'll say tolerance with some of these people. Okay, yeah, he's abiding by the Constitution, he's doing this, but he doesn't quite understand that. That don't mean you just get rid of him and start over. Because there may not be anybody there that's even half as good as that one.
Exactly.
So you take that base that you have to work with and build on it and help him to understand and get him where you want him, or her, as it may be.
Exactly. Well, and one of the things I tell people is, they're not quite there yet. Well, answer me one question. Are they willing to learn?
Right.
If they're willing to listen and they're willing to learn, then you got something.
Yeah. Yep, I agree. Someone, I don't remember who it was, someone put in the chat room a while ago that Interpol is issuing warrants now against us, and that is not possible. Interpol does not issue warrants for anybody. Interpol is not while they are considered a policing agency, they don't have the law enforcement power to do that. They help with investigations and get information and stuff to other law enforcement. If there is an arrest made or a warrant issued, it is done by one of the member countries. There's about 200 countries that are signed up, in part of Interpol, and that nation, whatever it may be, will issue warrants and make the arrest. Interpol does not get involved in things like that. Unless their basic rules and policies and stuff change, then it's been that way ever since its inception. There's been people that have, for years, have said that, yeah, there's warrant out, Interpol is going to come get you. Interpol is not going to come get you. They're just not. Period. They may help with information to get another agency to come and get you, but Interpol itself does not do that. They are more of an information agency than anything else.
Exactly.
So don't be afraid of, don't be concerned that Interpol is, they do not issue warrants, they do not serve warrants, they help with information. That's their biggest job.
Exactly. So,
well, let's see, what do we got for time? We still got a few minutes. What? Where's mine? Oh. Oh, that's right. I don't. Okay. Well, you're off the hook then. I don't drink coffee, and she knows that. That's another good kid right there. You got a bunch of good kids running around here.
I do. I do. By the way, our meal was cooked for us tonight by the 12-year-old.
Uh-huh. And it was just fine. It did a good job. I was. That's why we took a long break again. So we. That's what happened last night. You know, oh boy, I'm not stopping now. Just play another couple of songs.
Exactly.
Be back. That was. They take turns around here. That's a good deal. Okay, let's see here.
Yeah, around here, if they're old, if they're tall enough to look into the pan, they're tall enough to cook.
That's right. There's a story here, kind of changing gears a little bit, going back to some gun stuff. There is a newspaper columnist who is blaming the gun store, crying foul here after the gun store rejected his application to purchase a firearm after his background check was uncovered that he had admitted to a history of alcohol abuse and a charge for domestic battery involving his wife. So now he's mad at the gun store because he couldn't pass the background check. Gun manufacturers and the stores that sell them make their money in the dark, he said. This guy's name is Neil Steinberg with the Chicago Sun-Times. In his column, he wrote that in his failed attempt to buy a rifle, he says, Congress, which has so much trouble passing the most basic gun laws, passed a law making it illegal for the federal government to fund research into gun violence. Except for the week or two after massacres, the public covers its eyes. Would-be terrorists can buy guns, insane people can buy guns, but reporters, that's a different story. Well, it goes right up there and says he admitted to alcohol abuse and domestic battery. And once you have domestic battery, you're done.
Yep.
Unless you somehow get that expunged from your record, get a pardon, you are not going to be legally buying another gun for the rest of your life. Like it or lump it, whatever it is, you can thank Frank Lautenberg for that. And until that is removed from law, that's the way it's going to be.
Yep.
And I know a guy, and I've said this before, I knew a guy in Wyoming that got his gun rights taken away for doing nothing more than snatching a phone out of his girlfriend's hand. Didn't touch her. Didn't even make skin contact, but he yanked the phone out of her hand. Didn't threaten her, didn't hit her, didn't do nothing, just took the phone away.
Yep.
They took him to court, she pressed charges, he lost his gun rights for the rest of his life.
I know a veteran that I served in Iraq with that, him and his now ex-wife, of course, got in a argument after his return from a combat zone. And sadly, the argument was over infidelity. And he went outside in the pasture and vented. And he was a cowboy shooter. He decided to vent by taking the old cowboy rocking chair that was on his porch, haul it out in the middle of the pasture, and blow it to pieces with his .44. He got a domestic violence charge over that and lost his gun rights because him and the chair had a duel out in the middle of the pasture.
See, that's one of those things that I just have no words. I don't know. It's just so retarded, so dumb that, so a guy goes out. Would it be okay that if you go to the bowling alley and throw that ball extra damn hard, make noise down there because you're venting off a little bit of frustration, and I'm going to throw that ball. I don't care if I make a strike or not. I throw the damn ball down there hard. How come I don't get a domestic violence charge for that?
Yep.
So I take a gun out and blow off a little steam, blast some stuff. That's a good way to blow off some steam.
Yeah. Well, you see these YouTubers going out there and teaching their kids a lesson by taking their laptop or their tablet out there and putting it on the ground and take a shotgun to it and blow it to pieces. You're actually pressing your luck with domestic violence because you, as they explain it, you did a violent act upon a piece of property that belonged to somebody that you live domestically with.
Please. So, but it wouldn't be the same if I took a sledgehammer out behind the shop and attacked a piece of concrete just to be venting,
Or putting on a pair of boxing gloves, going out and working over a heavy bag.
Packing a heavy bag for a little while. Yeah, I don't know. That is. We need something to change. pretty quick.
We do. We really do. You know, and that's the sad thing about it, Cope, is, you know, once you've entered the system for any reason, there's virtually no escape.
Yeah, yeah, you know, no kidding.
There's just virtually no escape from it.
It would take, I don't know how long it would take, or if it's even possible. Once you're in there, how do you just disappear?
Yep.
It would almost certainly require going to another country.
Yep.
It would make it a lot easier. It would be very difficult to do and stay here.
Yep.
And even then, you know, with fingerprints and retina scans and facial recognition and all this stuff, in the first place, you'd have to have a little money. It would be hard for you to stow away on a ship and go to Brazil and start over. Yeah, you could probably hide for a while. You know, we had Nazi war criminals that hid for a while, but eventually they were caught. And with modern technology, that we, you know, the stuff we have now, if you're already in the system, it's going to be pretty hard for you to disappear.
Exactly. And, you know, and literally they've been successful at stacking it against you. You can't go and cash out all your bonds and sell your home and sell your car and, you know, liquefy everything you have and travel out of country legally, because you've got to claim anything over $10,000 if you leave the country with it.
Yep.
You know.
And why is this my money?
Exactly. You know, and if they happen to catch you driving from Idaho through Nevada or wherever, and a cop stops you, civil forfeiture, they can just take it to from you, because simply the normal citizen doesn't carry $10,000 cash on him.
Yep.
So you must be up to no good since you have this money. I mean, they've got it set to where really there's just no escape from it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a sad state of affairs we've allowed to take place here in our country, for sure. Well, we've about used up our 2 hours. You got anything you want to close with?
Let's see. Marble's coming this weekend.
Oh, yeah, Marble. We got the class. We got other classes. Got a lot of stuff going on up at Marble.
Yep. You're going to be starting your phase three, right?
Yeah, personal defense handgun three. Yeah.
Class Friday at 8 in the morning, right?
Yep, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
And so that's going to be pretty good. There's a lot of activities going on up there. We're going to have a really good showing from what it looks like from elected officials from all over the West.
Yeah.
That's going to be really good. There's going to be some youth classes there for land nav, AR teardown and reassembly. There's going to be some pretty good gathering up there. I'm actually got invited to stay with a local family there.
Oh, yeah?
Me and the kids. We're going to be staying with a local family up there. I've worked with her before. Ronnie is her name.
Oh, yeah, I know who you're talking about. Yeah, she called me earlier.
Okay. Yeah, she's in charge of all the housing there at Marble. When I worked with her personally myself is during the fires up north here.
Yeah.
We needed contacts within the county, Stevens County, to move supplies. And, again, the bureaucracy, we were moving horse trailers full of supplies, and we couldn't get through the state patrol roadblocks to get the supplies in. And so I needed a county commissioner's name, and so I got a hold of Ronnie. And Ronnie
retarded.
Yep, and Ronnie got me a phone number, and so we were able to get the supplies through the state patrol lines, their checkpoints. By the way, good point to make on that, and Ronnie helped me with this, to move in the supplies, destinations and everything. In that three-week period, the Patriot Movement, this was all the Patriot Movement, no government or entities whatsoever, in 3 weeks moved $3 million worth of supplies up north.
Wow. We have a good network up here.
We do. We had dump trucks with canned food in it. I mean, the construction companies used low boys and dump trucks to move supplies. Animal feed, shelter building material, food, clothing. we had supplies go to northern Washington on the Canadian border from Utah. And literally they bounced supplies. One person would drive it 50 miles, the next person would drive it 100 miles, and they just kept bouncing it forward. And literally the supplies from Utah ended up...
Uncle Bill had quite something to do with that. He got quite a few of those things.
Yep, that's exactly who I worked with, was Bill. Yeah. And they actually ended up going into Seattle first, and then we bounced them over the pass over here, and then they left out of Yakima here from the shop out here. They were actually stored in the shop out here, and then bounced forward.
Yeah,
and everything. And it was crazy, just to tell you how corrupt it got with working with other organizations. Is we were sending them the supplies to food banks and everything, any place where people would come to get supplies. The Red Cross. And we were contacted by many people that said that they drove 100 miles one way to a Red Cross to get blankets, food, and water and stuff. Well, the Red Cross would tell me, we'll give you supplies as long as you stay in the shelter here. If you just come in here, we'll give you a case of water, a blanket, and send you on your way. Well, here's the thing. The Red Cross, these weren't donations to the Red Cross.
Yeah.
This was donations that the Patriot Movement sent to their locations so it could be dispersed. And the Red Cross claimed the stuff as their own. And once they met the criteria by the government has a criteria of how much they must support once they get on site. And once they made that criteria, the Red Cross packed up and pulled out. And they did not leave the supplies behind.
Hmm. Unbelievable.
But just the point being is communities supporting communities, patriots supporting patriots. They moved $3 million in supplies purchased by patriots and shipped by patriots. That's amazing.
Yeah, it is. That's pretty, considering it was what we call the unorganized militia.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think the organization was probably pretty good.
Well, we beat FEMA on the ground. When we did get on the ground, we brought supplies and equipment with us. FEMA sent 2 weeks ahead. They sent a couple people in basically white coats and hard hats to assess the situation. And it was another 2 weeks before they even got anything on the ground. And by that time, it was over and the Patriots had it handled.
That whole thing, I wasn't able to participate in that much. But I kept an eye on it, you know, and kept I watched it, and I was just amazed at how smoothly that went up until the Red Cross got involved.
Yep, exactly.
All right, well, we've managed to stumble through another 2 hours here. Let me go out and check and see what's going on in the chat room here, and see if there's anything we need to talk about. The Katie Brad, does most survival circle think we can take on an army? Yeah. We might lose, but we can take them on.
We can always take them on.
Yeah, that's right. Although there has been many times in history that armies have been pushed back, stalled, or defeated by the indigenous people.
Oh, yes, very much so.
Many times, sometimes for years, yep. In the case of Afghanistan. But yeah, there's maybe we'll talk about that one of these days. Oh, by the way, we'll have to look at the schedule. You probably don't know right off the top of your head. We'll have to check the schedule here. I would like to do at least our normal 2 hour Liberty Lounge. I wonder what's going on Friday night at Marble. I wonder if we'll be able to sneak in the Liberty Lounge there.
We might be able to. First part of it at noon will be registrations and stuff. There might be a meeting in the evening time, but I can't imagine it being real late in the evening.
Let's take a look here and see if we can see what the schedule looks like. Let's see here. Maybe I don't have it. Oh, yeah, right there. All right, give me a second to open this up, and we'll see if we can let you know what things look like for Friday night.
All right, while Cope is looking that information up, I'll finish. I went down a rabbit hole there with the supplies moving forward. Ronnie the great family that's putting me and my kids up while we're in Marble, she helped with that. She coordinated that all over the state, the locations where it was going. She's her organizational skills are outstanding. I mean, I literally, I'd get 100 calls a day of supplies and names and everything, and I literally would just text her with names, supplies, what was coming in, what was supposed to go where by the people that was given the supplies, and she just handled all of that. She had it all in a database, and she kept right on top of it. She'd give it a sufficient enough time, and she would call up the place, did the supplies arrive? If they didn't, she would contact who was shipping it and see if it got rerouted someplace. Great lady, great patriot lady, and she did really good with helping us organize those supplies moving north.
It looks like there's a round table going on. I don't know if we'll probably be involved in that. Okay. So there may not be a Liberty Lounge. We'll have to see. If we do, we probably won't know until the last minute. So if we're going to be involved with this round table from 7 to 9:30, then probably not.
Okay.
So, but we'll have a Liberty Lounge on for you one way or the other. It just may not be live. Okay. Well, we've had all the fun we can stand, and we appreciate you guys hanging out with us here. It was a lot of fun, and again, I apologize for putting Anthony on the spot there, but this call was interesting, and I wanted to see what this person had to say, so it potentially has some value to us. So, all right, we're out of here, and we will see you guys tomorrow, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't have nothing going tomorrow. So stay tuned for another two-hour show tomorrow night, and thank you very much. Good night.
Chug-a-lug, chug-a-lug, make you want to holler, hi-de-ho, burns your tummy, don't you know? Chug-a-lug, chug-a-lug, grape wine in a mason jar, homemade and brought to school by a friend of mine after class, me and him and this other.
You've been listening to The Shooting Bench. Tune in Monday through Thursday from 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. to midnight Eastern for the most politically incorrect show on talk radio.
Chug-a-lug, chug-a-lug. Make you want to holler, holler, ho. Burns your tummy, don't you know? Chug-a-lug, chug-a-lug. 4-H and FFA. On a field trip to the farm, me and a friend sneak off behind this big old barn where we uncovered a covered up moonshine still.
Tune in again on Fridays at the same time for 2 hours of classic country music on Liberty Lounge.
Chug-a-lug, chug-a-lug, make you want to holler, hi-de-ho, burns your tummy, don't you know? Chug-a-lug, chug-a-lug, jukebox and sawdust floor.
And catch Living Away Out Here with me, Amy Reynolds, Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, for the only good news out there. Trivia, stories, tips, hints, and fun on Living Way Out Here, right here on the Survival Circle Network.
Chug-a-lug, chug-a-lug, make it wanna holler, holler, oh. Burns your tummy, don't you know? Chug-a-lug, chug-a-lug, take a